Hi everyone, I'm Joanna.
And I'm Jenny.
And this is Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen. Jenny, we get a lot of emails, and I'd say 99% of them make my day. I'm like, oh my God, so nice to meet you. Bill from Nebraska, can't believe you're trying to learn Spanish. Or like, oh my God, Pilar from Colombia, thanks for writing in and telling us about your grandma. But then there's one email we received that we read after recording last episode that like set us on a tailspin.
Yeah. Want me to read it?
Yeah.
Chisme. Chisme.
Chisme.
Everyone listening is like, I want to know. Okay, bueno, te voy a leer este email.
Ay, léemelo, chica. Léemelo todo, vale.
So the subject says, ads in your podcast, ?
Is it in caps?
No, okay. I'm adding dramatic effect.
I love that.
So it's from, it's funny because I'm staring at his profile photo, I guess, from Gmail. And he's like a very happy, smiley man, which makes all the funnier. Okay, so I guess I shouldn't say his name.
Yeah, why don't we say his name is Chad? Because I've met only one Chad in my life.
Well, and like, sure, but this Chad is Latino, so I just want to make that note.
How about Chadino
wrote us, am I going crazy? Or are you guys seriously playing ads, ? And very irrelevant indeed, ? In your show? ¿Qué vaina es esta?
Oh my God, he seems upset. Chadino is upset.
Chadino's super pissed. He's super pissed because he heard an irrelevant ad smack dab in the middle of our podcast.
I feel so bad for him. He had to take 15 seconds out of his day while he was consuming free content to listen to us plug something in order for us to, you know, pay our electric bill.
This is what I don't get. I understand if this was like 2001 and people were just starting to... I remember when YouTube first started rolling out ads and people were just as pissed. They're like, what the hell is this? But now Facebook, even IGTV on Instagram, podcasts, every digital medium has had ads.
Yeah.
It's how we make our money.
And one of the biggest problems of the digital space at its inception was that it was very difficult to make money while doing it. So you have all of these people creating entertainment for free and then people consuming that entertainment, and then they had no way of monetizing on it. And now there are ways of monetizing on it, but just like I feel like every type of art, you know, I feel like Beethoven, when he, I don't know, started selling out his concerts or some shit, people were probably like, that fucking sellout Beethoven. We want our artists to starve. Look
pretty
at Van Gogh. Like, why is it, we have this obsession of like people who are in the arts and people who make stuff. The idea of them making money off of it is sort of something people have to get used to. There's always like a rejection of that. And I remember one of the first actors of SNL, she came to speak to us at Second City once, and she was telling us about how in the 80s she agreed to do a commercial and she got so much blowback. Like, oh my God, she sold out. She did a syrup commercial. This woman doesn't know real art. Now it's not perceived as sellout. We see people and everyone from SNL, comedians, Tracy Morgan is doing like insurance commercials.
Yeah.
Like now it's normalized. But there was a time where even that was perceived as being a sellout.
It's fascinating because I know when I first started making content online professionally, which was back in 2011, I remember getting tons of complaints. And back then I didn't do any brand deals or anything like that. But when there would be just a simple ad, again, on YouTube, I feel like there were times where I would comment back or explain something and people would be like, well, you chose to be an artist. You should have gotten a 9-to-5. You should have just changed careers then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so you're trying to say that artists are supposed to just exist for your pure entertainment, but starve, make no money, make absolutely no living from our art.
Yeah.
That is essentially what they were saying back then.
But look at it now. Like, I think that one of the most interesting parts, particularly in the last few years, is how there's a diversity in the way that you can monetize online. So OnlyFans is literally specialized for pornographic content so that people have autonomy over what they publish and what they make money off of. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because you compare this to like 2001 Paris Hilton's porn video being, you know, released as basically what we have a word for now, revenge porn, and her having to sue in order for her, one, for, like, she couldn't take the video offline, but two, for the profit to be partly given to her, which she actually gave to charity. But now, like, this is an economy that is functioning and it's changing and it's becoming more and more specific. But even then, there is this sort of taboo, like what you said. I know that you probably received a lot more comments in like, you know, 10 years ago than what you're receiving now, but we're still receiving it.
Yeah, because it's happened in waves. Once people got used to the ads on YouTube, those comments stopped. But I remember when ads started rolling into Facebook, which, by the way, Facebook would punish me because for a good 2 years that Facebook started rolling out ads, I refused to put ads in my videos because I knew how upset my audience would get. Mm-hmm. So I actually rejected getting money from my videos on Facebook for the sake of my audience. Mm-hmm. I remember polling my audience and asking them, like, what are your thoughts? Yada, yada. Of course, there were people who were supportive, but there was a good chunk of folks who said, I'm out. I don't want to be watching one of your sketches and have to sit through like a 1 minute commercial about, I don't know, mascara. So they were like, no, I don't like this. I don't like this. So anytime a new platform started to help creators monetize their videos, there was always a bit of an uproar.
Well, I think a lot of people perceive what we do as different than the entertainment industry. So I think that for digital creators like ourselves, it's almost like they have a personal connection. They follow and are subscribed to us as the person, not us a network, not us the agent, the manager, the person behind it, the lighting, the grip guy, the this. They feel a personal connection to a person. That's why they follow the person.
Yeah.
And I feel like for people, it almost feels like the mirage of this very intimate connection that they feel is not real. It's like, oh my God, there's ads. Oh my God, there's people editing this.
I guess they're not genuine and real like I expected.
Like they're taken out of this connection directly from audience to artist or creator or whatever. I always say it's almost kind of like Protestantism happened in the entertainment industry. Like Martin Luther was like, hey, you don't need to go to church and like go to like a priest to talk to God. You can do it by yourself. Like you can do it. You can just, so that's sort of what happened with the internet.
Yeah.
It was perceived as this pure thing. Like, wow, we no longer need executives to okay us. We can put our content out there and have people follow us. It restored power to the artist. But it then had this very fickle, weird reaction where, okay, this is a pure connection. Therefore, money shouldn't be involved because that's no longer pure.
Yeah, you know, it's like digital audiences treat content creators like when you start your own business or you start doing stand-up and, you know, you tell your friends and they're all like, oh, that's so good for you. Can I get 2 tickets?
Can I get, oh, actually 3. My cousin wants to come.
Yeah. Or like, can I get one of your shirts, but like for free?
That sounds like Chadino. That sounds like
Chadino. Chadino definitely does not want those ads. And it's, man, it is so infuriating. I mean, digital media, digital content creators have been around long enough. It shouldn't come as a shock. I mean, I just, my husband and I did a quick trip to Palm Springs last week, and the entire road trip, we listened to podcasts, one of them being The Office Ladies, because we were huge fans of The Office. They had massive commercials. And these are two women with like celebrity status. They still have to put ads in their podcast and they're very long ads. Yeah, like I would just like kind of lower the volume a little bit and just chat with my husband. And then when they can, you know, whatever, you don't do what you want to do. It's like when you're watching TV, if you don't want to see 10 psoriasis commercials back to back, then fucking lower the volume, mute it, fucking clip your toenails. I don't know, dude, but that's what I find funny. People are okay, like, sitting through these terrible drug commercials and these auto insurance commercials on their television, but they can't handle a podcast ad?
Speaking of ad, hey, Jenny, do you know what service I didn't know I needed?
What?
Sometimes when I'm enjoying free content online, I want to complain about it, but I can't really find the words. Now introducing Chidino, an incredible app where one really annoyed guy writes emails for you when you don't enjoy something.
I was about to look it up on the App Store.
I saw you looking down like, oh,
you
fuck,
just
Chidino.
Burst my bubble. Fuck, who's going to complain for me?
That is obviously not a real ad. Here's a real ad.
A different form of ad, right, is what I do the most. Branded content.
Which isn't an ad in the middle of a video.
No.
It's that a brand tells you, hey, Jenny, please put this tampon in your video somehow.
In your...
Ay, Dios mío.
You walked right into that, and that's why I love you.
This is going to help us with our ads.
No, but yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. So, for instance, you know, like I've worked with Snickers and TurboTax and, you know, whatever, DiGiorno. And so there's a lot of back and forth, and there's just all these rules, and there's usually, like, tons of PDFs and PowerPoint presentations of what they're looking for and whatever, and then the creator has to come up with a script. And it's like, okay, how am I going to sell DiGiorno with my characters? It's a very long process, and I personally make sure that my audience is still going to enjoy the content as if it was a regular sketch, despite it being a brand.
That's really hard to accomplish.
It's very hard, but it has been done. I'm pretty proud of myself because a lot of the comments on a lot of my branded videos tend to say, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this was a brand. Like, this is a great branded video. I was laughing the whole time.
Yeah, you do a great job at it.
I bust my butt, you know, but at the same time, there have been people who have told me that I'm a sellout for making a branded video. Mm-hmm. So then I have to make sure I'm balancing it out, that I'm keeping my audience happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the la gasolina to keep the vehicle moving.
Claro.
So I did, you know, some branded deals, and for a few, like, couple years there, I was like an independent creator, and it was really hard for me because so much of my content is really opinionated and like and I don't have a lot of characters. Like, usually I play myself.
Yeah.
And I remember for one branded video, I shot the whole video, and then the brand comes back and says, hey, yeah, we're gonna need you to reshoot it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had a skull ring on, and that makes the brand look bad. And I was like, oh, honey, absolutely not. Do you know what a shoot day entails? Like, how much work it is? How many people you have to wrangle? The transportation, the equipment. And it was like a contentious battle.
Oh,
and it was after
man.
That point that I told myself, like, I can't do it. But that's because I have the absolute luxury of having a job in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
But when I didn't, I literally had no choice. I got to keep money coming in because I'm spending money making videos.
Yes. We put money into our videos, guys.
It was literally a time where I was just doing branded content to break even. And when I would get those messages, it was just like, dude, what do you want from me? I'm making stuff for you, but you have to give me the liberty of finding the ways for this to make sense monetize. Like, do you want me to, like, lose my house? Like, I don't understand. More videos. Why don't you post more videos? Oh, wait, this is a branded one. Fuck you.
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel like there is a massive misunderstanding with audiences who know absolutely nothing about content creation or filmmaking. They don't know the work that goes into it. I remember even when I was at BuzzFeed, most of the BuzzFeed audience had no idea that the people that they loved on camera were also video producers who literally did not sleep. But they assumed we were just talent who would just show up, roll around on the ground with puppies and eat strange foods. And that was it. And a lot of the comments were like, must be nice. Meanwhile, I'm reading these comments with my right eye twitching from the severe stress.
The sleep deprivation. You haven't
there was,
you hadn't slept
There was
since,
no
like...
work life. Oh yeah, at these digital media companies, there's absolutely no work life balance. And then these audiences still think I have that kind of network support. There was one person that's like, you need to hire this and that. I'm like, hire?
How?
What? It's just me and my friend Kevin. That's it. That's where it's just us two. We do everything.
Like, everything.
Literally, right now, my videos, it's me and Kevin who tag team writing the sketches. Kevin shoots everything and does sound. And then I edit. and do the graphics. Sometimes we have a third person, like my friend Christina, who will come in and help us with additional shooting. But people think that you have all this intense support. You got execs, you got a crew of editors, and I'm like, oh, that is not the case. So there's like a weird disrespect there because they're like, oh, this is easy.
I think back, like during the pandemic, it was just me and my cousin, and I think we made like 2 videos a week or something, and just to not go insane. And I remember getting absolutely burnt out because I feel the need to produce and make content, but because, and I don't want to come here like, oh my God, it's so like hard, my life is so hard. But there is a very solitary feeling when you're a internet creator because you're doing the writing, then you're doing the editing, then you're doing the metadata, then you're doing the uploading, then you're doing the comments, then you're doing the reposting, then you're...
It doesn't end after you produce the video. It's continuous.
It's continuous. And what it felt to me almost was like I had to do everything because if I didn't do it, who else would?
Yes.
And that's both so empowering, but then also exhausting and isolating because even though you literally are in direct contact with thousands of people, you're by yourself.
Yes.
A lot of that time. So it's this weird juxtaposition of having this connection to your platform and base, then simultaneously being very alone during most, if not all, of the process.
Yeah, it can get extremely lonely and you don't really realize the impact you're making because everything is just numbers on a screen. That's why for me, when I've done live shows, like when me and the Chonga girls did a live performance in Miami, we sold out to over 700 people. And that was the first time where I was completely overwhelmed with joy because I was able to put faces to these numbers and realize we have a bigger impact than we realize. And I remember when I worked at We Are Me Too, I was having one of those days that I was feeling down on myself. I was feeling burned out. And my boss at the time told me, you have to understand that a lot of content creators have a greater reach than the average TV show. You get more viewers than a TV show. You have to realize the impact that you're making. It may not come with all the glitz and glamour of being a TV star, because when you're a TV star, you're made to feel important. But when you're a content creator, you're just on your couch. Just by yourself, and you don't really realize if you're doing anything good with your work.
Absolutely.
If it's making an impact. And yes, I read as many comments as I can, but I think when you also suffer from like an anxiety disorder like me, when you're feeling down on yourself, there's no changing it. Mm-hmm. The one negative comment is going to take you down despite the 100 positive comments.
It's insane how that works. You know, with all the face cancer shit, my sister came to visit me, but my sister was like, I notice you really at peace and like happy. And I was like, you're right. And then I realized it was because I actively decided to take a break from social media and posting and just focus on my writing and my health. It did make me understand that I was maybe posting for the wrong reasons. Sometimes there's this feeling of like an adrenaline, like almost like a drug. When a video's doing well, it literally feels like a drug.
It's a dopamine high.
And I was like chasing that.
Yep.
But then while you chase that, you also get the negative, which is if you're positively affected by how a video is doing, you can also just as easily get negatively affected with what people say about you. So that is it's letting the video or letting the content affect your heart and your brain and your everything. And I was feeling that without even knowing it. I was feeling that for the past like 7 years.
Dude.
And I didn't even notice. I thought that was the norm. I thought that was normal. But there was something so absolutely refreshing of not feeling the necessity of eyeballs on me to feel successful.
Oh my gosh. I feel this so hard. I mean, I feel comfortable talking about this on the podcast, but I haven't announced it. But I recently started working in my first writer's room for an animated series. Yes. And it's extremely time consuming, obviously, because it's a job for a major network. Mm-hmm. And so it's like 3 days a week. And then in addition to that, then I have my hosting job for Disney Plus. So I have these external jobs now that have nothing to do with my content creation, my own schedule, my characters, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not that I want to stop. I know how important and special the Abuela character is to a lot of people. Like, there's a lot of folks that have written me saying, please don't stop making abuela videos. So it's not that I want to stop, but there is this anxiety. I'm still kind of in between where I'm feeling a lot of relief that I don't have to kill myself trying to make a video every week. Mm-hmm. Because I completely understand what you mean by it feeling like a drug. Releasing a video out into the internet and like reading all the comments and seeing people saying how funny it is and that they're laughing. And as comedians, that's like the greatest feeling in the world. It is so healing, both for the audience and for yourself, to be able to make people laugh. And it's just like your life's purpose, you know? And then a week goes by, and like I said, you know, the internet, it moves fast. People forget about the video. It's over.
It's done.
It was fun while it lasted. Now you gotta fucking go and think of the next one. And then you have to try to one-up your last video and make sure it's just as funny, if not funnier. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, I was at Disneyland on Friday with my husband, and a girl stopped us because she recognized us. And she was a Latina, but she was with her very white boyfriend. And she's like, oh my God, remember, this is the girl who was like, the baby Jesus? Remember the baby Jesus? Now, she's referring to a sketch that I made in like 2017. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize a lot of content creators are always so stressed about we need to keep making content because people are just gonna
the next thing.
When people are clearly rewatching your stuff and it's out there, people still consume it frequently or rewatch. I know I used to do that with a lot of my favorite YouTube videos. Till this day, mm-hmm. I go down rabbit holes and I watch old E-Bombs World stuff that I was a big fan of back
this
in the day.
The earth. Sweet earth, you might say, round hockey.
Then fire the missiles.
Oh my God.
See, we both know exactly what we were talking about.
Speaking of tampons, hey Jenny, do you use tampons?
I sure do, Joanna.
Me too. And that's why we really wanted to talk about our favorite tampon. It's a bubblegum scented tampon. You smell like bubblegum and you don't bleed out of your vagina.
My vagina would certainly appreciate a bubblegum scented tampon.
I know.
It would really benefit from it. Now I'm just imagining my vagina blowing bubbles.
Oh, I think that there's a show in Thailand where that happens, actually. I think I went to it, actually. I don't want to talk about it. That is not a real ad. We are fucking with you. But you know what's different, Jenny, is that when, like, YouTube started, they literally had a guy curating videos. So they had a guy being like, I'm going to pick these 10 videos and put it on the home screen. But then the entire fabric of uploading videos changed to it being run by machines and algorithms. And I think a big part of the reason that content creators are so stressed in creating content is because content creators, we always talk about the algorithm. It's almost like we talk about the algorithm without knowing exactly what the algorithm is.
It's an evil villain that looks like a snail.
It's an evil villain that like helps you because it recommends you videos and like gets you more followers. But then suddenly it's like a fickle bitch. And then she hates you and you don't know why your videos
are. None of your followers are going to see your shit now.
And there's always this game. It's like upload at 3 p.m. or at 12 p.m. Don't upload on Sundays. Upload this day. Oh,
upload once, not twice.
There's all these like tricks and this and that. It has nothing to do with the content. It has everything to do with gaming and playing the system. And mm-hmm. I've met a lot of creators through YouTube that are like, specifically, they were like, we gamed the system. We figured out what type of video was gonna hit, and that's the video we made. And they're very successful. They make a lot of money off YouTube. But I never functioned like that. I was like, I want to make a video about how long the Venezuelan birthday song is. Like, I don't care how many people see it. And I'm like, I'm gonna upload it when it's done. So I never gamed the system.
No, me neither.
Gaming the system. And there's a lot of that in the internet space. It is eternal. And now with TikTok, it's like, all right, well now the whole platform has changed. Now everyone's uploading to TikTok. And now like everyone's like, oh my God, if you're not on TikTok, you're not on anything. So this isn't like an old industry where, you know, Brad Pitt is Brad Pitt because Brad Pitt is Brad Pitt. But here it's like you have a Vine star, Vine dies. And unless they're able to adapt, change, and continue to upload, they're nobodies quickly.
We're like a weird bacteria. So,
ooh, I love that
virus. We have to just keep evolving in order to survive.
Oh, God.
But we have to evolve at a much faster pace. It's not just like, I'm some video editor named Tom and I have to switch from Final Cut to Premiere. No one's gonna get this joke.
this is an interesting joke.
It's an, you wouldn't get it. But like those things take time, like, you know, like years of developing new software, and you're like, okay, I guess I'll learn this new software. But mm-hmm. now you blink and it's like, well, if you don't know how to do Reels, and if you don't know how to do this, and if you don't know how to edit on TikTok, and you have to, and if not, you're gonna get swallowed up whole.
Yeah, and I think that's something that people that aren't in the industry don't realize, how the internet is like a new concept, basically, compared to the history of the world and society. And because of that, it is evolving at such a high and fast rate that yeah. people that have attached their careers to it also have to evolve quickly at a high and fast rate. And working in traditional media, working in television, there's these structures, the ways that things work and the economy works, and there's roles and there's this and there's that. But even they are changing, because right now I'm working on a TV show and they're like, I mean, will we even have the channel by the time this the show comes out? And it's like, wait, what? It's like, yeah, we'll probably just put it on the streaming service. And it's like, oh, okay. And then they're like, oh, this is crazy, Jenny. I'm literally writing jokes sometimes that I think, oh, if we take this 15-second clip and put it on TikTok, it'll go viral. Like, traditional media is being influenced by the digital space.
Absolutely.
But there is, like, since it's been around for longer, it's evolving slower, while the internet is just fucking, I don't know, straight up like Madonna-ing it up, like changing their identity and brand every 2 seconds.
Yeah, because now Instagram, that started off as a photo app mm-hmm. to share pictures of your dog or of your feet by the pool.
Sounds like an OnlyFans now.
the hot dog leg phenomenon, you know, and with like these cool little filters. Now it's a video forward app now, because they're trying to compete. And then now the people at Instagram are like, you need to make like 10 reels a week, or we're not going to promote you, and you're just going to plateau and die.
It's exhausting.
In the graveyard of content creators. And it's just, it is exhausting. So now I feel like my anxiety is not so much coming from the pressure of pleasing my audience with a weekly video, or the desire for that dopamine hit every time a video is released and it does well. Now, the real stress, like you were mentioning, is coming from the almighty shit turd fuck bag of an algorithm. It's like basically El Sereno. We don't yeah. know what it is, but it's killing children that don't wear sweaters. And it's, you know, it's taking lives. And that's what the algorithm is. And you know what's interesting? I have personally worked with YouTube, with Facebook. Mm-hmm. I know people in there. I've been to the headquarters. They don't even know about the algorithm. That is what is terrifying. Yeah.
It's so fucking weird.
I'll tell you this real quick. This is something that baffles me till this day, and it really bugs me. But Facebook is where I have my largest following, right?
Yeah, me too, actually.
By now, I should have been at a much larger number. I've stayed at practically the same number now for the past 2 years. Nobody at Facebook knows why. And I remember at the start of the pandemic, I released a sketch that went viral. It got over 29 million views. My following did not grow at all. I talked to people at Facebook that I knew. They did not know why. They, till this day, they do not know why.
Well, it's crazy, because like, I think that there's so much mystery in this space, because a lot of it is not planned or done by people. It's done by whatever this algorithm thing is, or machines, or it's engineering. It's engineered based. Like, YouTube isn't a video production company, but like, what makes YouTube YouTube is its algorithm, is its way of selling you other videos. It's connecting this video to this video with these keywords. That's what YouTube is, and that's what a lot of these platforms are. They're aggregators and algorithms. They're equations, essentially, where art is placed and pictures of butts. But at the end of the day, it's trying to sell you what they think you like. And there's secret science math ways that, you know, two comedians are never going to understand.
Especially with ADHD and dyscalculia. It's not going to happen. It literally breaks my head into 1,000 pieces.
It does. But Jenny, you know what's... My husband went to business school,
yeah.
right? And for me, I was like, oh my God, business school people. They are like, you know, businessy, and they're business. And every time I talk to one, I sort of be like, not embarrassed because I love my job and I don't really, but I'm like, these guys probably don't give a shit about what I do. And like, but slowly I started realizing that we're entrepreneurs. We have our own company, which is our brand. We distribute our product. Yep. We have to balance the checkbook and see how much income is coming and how much we can spend. We have to look at the market. This term as of artist, yes, that is part of what we are. We are artists. But we're also entrepreneurs. And that's what the digital space sort of forces artists into. Mm-hmm. You have to be a business. Yeah. And in order to have a successful business, you need to make money. Which brings us back to Chadino,
bro.
Chadino, I'm so sorry, bro. You got to keep up with the times, my man. This is how the new world is. You got to get used to ads and podcasts. You got to get used to pre-rolls. You got to get used to all this shit because it's not going away. It's just going to change more and more.
Boom.
Chadino, ¿por qué no vas y escuchas otra mierda?
¿Qué vaina es esta? That's what I thought about your email. So if you're listening right now and you heard an ad or about to hear an ad, it's a good sign. That means hyphenated will continue. It will go on like Celine Dion's heart. The worst joke.
No, that's fine. Her heart did go on. She had a tragic, you know, life story, but her heart did go on.
Her heart did go on, and this podcast will go on. This podcast will go on. People are now going to unsubscribe because we can't sing.